Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Senior Vice President ICANN, Kirk Pritz.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you very much. And, you know, your kind reaction from a while ago this morning was really directed at me, but also directed at so many people that did so much work on this program, both in the ICANN staff and in this room, and those that aren't able to make it tonight. So if everybody who wants to attend, come on in, and if you want to continue talking, you can leave and do that too. Thanks. So what we're going to talk about today is really an information session again on what the recent developments are for the applicant guidebook, that guide for new GTLD applicants who wish to delegate a new top-level domain to bring this pretty knowledgeable community up to speed on the latest changes, afford the opportunity to ask some questions about it. I'm joined really ably here today by Karen Lentz, ICANN's Manager of Research and Content and singularly responsible for the whole gosh darn applicant guidebook. Michael Salazar, the new GTLD program director, who's charged with the execution work now and has retained an excellent team of people to work toward that end, and Barbara Clay, ICANN's Vice President of Communications, who will discuss the communications plans. So you're saved because we have them and not just me. The agenda really is a brief reflection on the community participation for this program, a description of what the board approved. So we all read through the resolution this morning, and I wanted to briefly review that to give an indication of exactly what the board said today and the rationales for those decisions. Then Karen's going to take us through the latest changes in the guidebook. Michael's going to describe how ICANN's getting operationally ready, both to evaluate the applications and then for ICANN to provide services afterward to the new top level domains. Barbara's going to talk about our communications program that is launching presently, and then I'll just wrap up with some timeline comments. So first, I want to discuss briefly with you and reflect briefly on community participation in this program. So this next set of slides really is for three things. One, it gives me the opportunity to demonstrate my mastery of ICANN Arcania in the guise of all these acronyms that we've invented. Two, it affords me briefly the opportunity to thank again the vast numbers of people that volunteered their time and worked really hard to execute the program. And three, I really want to point out, while we've been at this a long time in this timeline, really a lot of work was accomplished in short periods of time, bursts of activity that solved very difficult problems that were raised by the community and then dealt with in the guidebook so we could get to where we wanted to today. So we, you know, this really started with the GNSO, I think, four GNSO chairs ago, right? Bruce, Chuck, Avery, and Stefan. And that group's work was informed by various working groups. There was an IDN working group that discussed the delegation of IDNs to ensure that they were delegated along with ASCII new GTLDs. There was a reserve names working group that wrote a substantial report about how names should be reserved and not. The protection of rights working group that came to certain conclusions about the guidebook. And the GAC at that time was actively involved and wrote their processes about new GTLDs. Afterwards, the GAC stayed involved and worked closely with the board in developing some compromises around geographical names. An IDN working group was formed that was chaired by Harold Avastrand and Ram Mohan that discussed the delegation of variant TLDs and also the possibility of delegating either two or single character IDNs. And progress was made there. At the Mexico City meeting, It was decided to form the implementation recommendation team, and nowhere in that name does it say protection of rights or trademark or anything, but a group of 18 community IP attorneys that met several times in all regions of the world to first develop a set of rights protection mechanisms and then deliver the message about those rights protection mechanisms and inform the public. And after that, and the STI group, of course, was formed to give a community ratification to those rights protection mechanisms. Other groups were formed around that time, right after that time, too. A high security TLD team was formed to investigate whether a certain class of TLD should be formed to where registrants have a higher expectation of security and how rules for that might be written. There was a zone file access group that was chaired by Craig Schwartz, where they delivered a product on providing a simple form for those who are needing zone file data to access it simply in an environment where there were so many TLDs. I was amazed when I saw this chart how long the JIG, the IDN working group, has been in place, working on the delegation of single character names and elsewhere. There's the uniquely named REC6 working group that discussed certain objection processes and morality and public order. The guidebook was markedly changed due to their work. And then I think the work went on. So how come the slides aren't going on? There we go. And then a vertical integration working group was formed to tackle that very difficult problem. And then a temporary drafting group was formed to discuss registry contract issues and hold open meetings about issues regarding the registry contract. And presently, there's three groups still going on, right? There's the board interaction with the GAC that continued yesterday. And if you read all the materials, and later on we'll talk about the homework that the GAC has assigned to the board and the board and GAC working together as the program is launched. The Joint Applicant Support Working Group is working very hard to ensure that a program is in place in time for the first round so that applicants from developing countries who need it can get financial aid or technical advice or the like. And then a session just ended. The idea, it's called the VIP team. So one of the last acronyms we're gonna create. Actually, I think Mike has the last acronym to discuss how variant TLDs could be delegated. So a long period of time, but short bursts of very intense, difficult work where a substantial work product was created. You know, we were sitting in with the board last night just going through documents, and as we were scrolling through pages and pages of stuff that had been written, and all of it really substantial, some of us just started laughing, amazed at the amount of work that's been undertaken and done by the community. So, again, I'll never get over that amount of work that was done by you all. I'm only going to spend a second on new GTLD program goals because I hope they're self-evident, but it's all about user choice, it's about competition, it's about innovation, it's about bringing new services to registrants for the benefit of communities, for IDN users, and for increased commerce and new jobs, and most importantly, to work in the public interest. This opening commercial part's almost over. Certainly there are some really intended results. There are some really intended results of the new GTLD program, right? A safer environment with new trademark protections, malicious conduct mitigation measures. There's been a collaboration over scaling the root zone and ensuring these TLDs are launched in a safe, secure, stable manner. The creation of dispute resolution processes that take disputes out of the ICANN world and lets parties work them out in international fora that's friendly to all regions. Several other implementation instances for the protection of registrants, such as registry transition procedures, so registrations and domain names continue to resolve if a registry experiences a loss of control, and then also insights applied to other areas. So some of the improvements here for GTLDs have been applied to registrars in that environment. So that's that. But the new GTLD program is just a teeny-weeny bit like the space program, right? There's some unintended benefits, too. You know, it's not as sophisticated or technically complex. But in doing all this work, we've actually created new processes and way of going about our day-to-day jobs that I think has made this ICANN a whole better place. We created the very effective cross-functional, cross-stakeholder working groups that got the consensus. We created this process for the board and GAC working together outside of ICANN meetings to discuss and make progress on substantive issues that, you know, personally I think really revalidate the government role, the effective government role, and the ICANN model, and proves that up. There's been increased transparency mechanisms about how we post things on the website, how we do public comments summaries, react to public comments, and turn them into actions in the policy implementation. There's new groups and participants in the ICANN model from large multinational corporations are now involved. Governments are more actively involved. The at-large has become very significantly involved in the new GTLD process, and as a result, in ICANN all told. So that's a significant shift, I think, for ICANN. And then finally, the ICANN staff is working more closely with the technical community. You know, I gave a presentation to the RSAC for the very first time. I was all nervous in front of those smart guys, you know. But we found that in order to reach agreement on root zone scaling or other technical issues, outreach and better ICANN relationships with the RSAC and IETF, there's ICANN staff now more closely linked with the IETF. So that's all unintended benefits that we're going to go on with. So what did the board approve this morning? Well, it approved the launch of the new GTLD program, as you know. It approved a timeline for launch that we'll talk about right at the end of this session. It approved or recognized, at least, that a risk assessment has been done. The ICANN Board Risk Committee has, over periods of months, looked at risks associated with the new GTLD introduction and developed mitigation measures or approved mitigation measures for each one of those risks. ICANN's published two communications plans and is poised, with press conferences today and news releases to launch that communications program. Later this week, ICANN will consider and approve a budget for FY12 that includes a separate carve-out for new GTLDs. The board approved continuing on with the applicant support work and committed to reaching a conclusion there and demonstrated its passion for doing that in time for the first round. It alluded to but has not published yet the rationales for its decision. So one of the improvements we've seen in transparency over the last several months is the ICANN board publishing more complete rationales for its decisions. The new GTLD program is really a host of decisions about trademark protections and registry transition and root zone scaling, and so you'll see published with the board minutes. I think what it's posted, but you won't be able to read it in one day. The rationale associated with all these decisions the board's made. It's also posted a rationale in those few areas where it's still there's still disagreement with the GAC, and then. The board also approved and recognized the operational readiness plans that have been done to date. So I talked briefly about the rationale for board decisions and got ahead of myself, but you'll see rationales for each one of these decisions that was necessarily made as part of the new GTLD program approval. And, you know, I bracketed the economic study and vertical integration rationales because they've already been published at an earlier time. So I just want to talk about a couple other things before I step aside for Karen. One is the board GAC cooperation in this that I kind of think is remarkable. How did my formatting got off? So, you know, we started with, 12 different issue areas that the board, that the GAC raised in their indicative scorecard, which was, in all the paperwork we get, it's another document, but really a unique piece of work that defines where the GAC really wanted action taken on the applicant guidebook and specified these areas of study. And in those of those areas, there were 80 specific sub-issues, not all differences. Some required clarification. And, through an exchange of documents and teleconferences that between subject matter leads and the face-to-face meeting in Brussels and subsequent calls and revisions to the guidebook and then a new set of conference calls and new face-to-face meetings with the GAC that were held in San Francisco, so much substantial progress was made in resolving, I would personally say nearly all of those issues, but a lot of those issues. But here on this slide, in true ICANN style, we focus on the differences and say, wait, you didn't agree with us. But, I must say on all those 12 issues, with the exception of a couple, we are now in agreement. And only in the case of trademark protections, where the GAC issues were essentially a list of about 30 different issues, we're left with four differences. And in those areas, yesterday, if you attended the GAC meeting, I heard some things, but mostly I heard that people that were really passionate about protecting trademarks and registrants argued about their theory about the best way to go about it. And so everybody was on the same side of that. So at the end of the day, I think the board GAC consultation was remarkable. It's kind of unfortunate that, to me, the GAC and the board are both groups that, they never celebrate their victories. So when one side would make a concession, nobody stood up or clapped, except for me quietly in the back of the room. But rather, they just went on. I think one of the things, one of the steps we need to take in ICANN working with the GAC and other groups is to take some time and say, look back on the remarkableness of the work and the fact that agreement was reached in areas where we didn't think that agreement was possible. So there's work left to do with the GAC. We have many areas of agreement. We have some areas of difference, and we have areas where the GAC has said, we're going to compromise on this issue, but we would like you to do some additional work. Some of that work is going to take place with the GAC and the board together. Some of the work is going to take place by the board or ICANN staff. Some of the work will take place before applications are accepted. Some of the work will take place after the first round. But these are the things that the GAC has left for ICANN and ICANN has agreed to. One is to flesh out the language around the new GAC advice procedure and the new GAC early warning procedures that the GAC is going to work on language so that they can clearly communicate the intent of their advice to the board. Two is that the GAC wanted governments to be able to object and have dispute resolution processes available to them for free. And ICANN responded back that that might break the bank, but ICANN would pay for one objection per government. And so the GAC is not certain about that, but what they've said is in your communication program, make sure you tell governments that this is available to them and how it works. The GAC asked us to complete documentation on root scaling and the steps taken to ensure that the whole system around the root zone continues on in a stable manner. There are certain questions about community TLDs going forward and how they can amend their agreements. And the GAC wants to have a voice in that, so certainly they could. And in the areas of trademarks, where the GAC has compromised, they said, well, we'll compromise on some of these issues on the first round, but we'd like you to do a post-launch study to determine the efficacy of these trademark protections. And when you contract with a trademark clearinghouse, we want you to put certain things in place so that if we want to change later, you know, if we want to change IP claims to addressing only perfect matches of or exact matches of trademarks, we want to later switch to exact match plus a key term that the clearinghouse has demonstrated its capability for doing that and tells you how. So, gratefully, I think the board's accepted those tasks and as a way to resolve a lot of the differences between the board and the GAC. So, you know, at the end of the day, you know, I think that's great. So I'm gonna thankfully get off the stage now for a while, but I'm gonna turn the clicker over to Karen, who's gonna take us through some of the guidebook the most important guidebook changes that have been made. So.
Good afternoon. I will be describing the changes that have taken place in the guidebook since the previous ICANN meeting in San Francisco, which spans a couple of versions. There was a discussion draft version that we posted in April, got comment on, and then turned around and published another version on May 30th, which is the version that the board passed a resolution on this morning. The applicant guidebook is organized according to a certain logic. There is starting off with the introduction of the various stages of the process, and then the subsequent modules, which roughly correspond to additional stages of the process that an application might go through. So starting with module one, some of the significant changes recently concern the background screening process that applications go through. Applicants list their key individuals, such as directors, officers, or shareholders in the application. There was some discussion a few meetings ago about to what extent that information should be made public. So what we've arrived at is that the names of the individuals will be posted along with the applications. The rest of the information would not be published, any personally identifying information. Also on the topic of background screening, we added a few additional areas where applicants are checked for issues in their background, such as cybercrime or consumer protection issues. Also, Module 1 takes you through the process, and there's been some detail and clarification on how application comments are used at various stages of the process. There's some new provisions on customer support in keeping with the work that's underway now to get those resources in place for applicants. Also, we've incorporated the GAC early warning and GAC advice processes so that it's clear where those fit in the various stages of the process. And then finally, there is a provision on changes to the guidebook going forward. It's expected that new standards will be adopted or new policies will come about, and so the guidebook will continue to evolve to keep up with those developments, and ICANN, of course, will publish and communicate all of those changes. Module 2 concerns the evaluation procedures. All applications go through a pretty rigorous evaluation. And Module 2 contains the questions and criteria that are used for scoring. A lot of changes have been made to that, mostly in the form of clarification, responding to questions that we got in public comment and other forums about what does this mean and what does this what would it take to get this type of score. So we've tried to clearly differentiate the different scoring levels that are used in the criteria. There have also been some substantive changes on some of the questions, particularly rights protection, abuse prevention, and security. The questions and scoring are written to provide some incentives for applicants to adopt certain procedures that are seen to be beneficial. Also added to the application form are some additional questions concerning the mission and purpose of the application. There are some questions going to what the applicant expects will be the benefits of their particular application and what might be some of the costs and what measures are being adopted to reduce those. So there's a new set of questions that has been included in the application, although it's important to note those are not part of scoring but are there to inform a later cost-benefit study on the experience once some of these TLDs are operational. Also in Module 2, we incorporated some advice from the SSAC on orphan glue records. They did some analysis on those and came up with a recommendation that registries should be required to remove orphan glue records when they're presented with evidence that they are being that they're present in connection with malicious conduct. So that has been incorporated there and in the registry agreement. Finally, one of the areas of evaluation is geographic names to ensure that government support is there where as appropriate for certain types of geographic names. There had previously been some language providing guidance on what level or type of government support might be expected for various types of geographic names. In discussions with the GAC, it came out that it's really a matter for each national administration to determine what the appropriate level is. And so that's been, the guidebook has been amended to reflect that with the advice to applicants that they seek counsel on that within the jurisdictions that are relevant to their application. Module 3 concerns objection procedures, and the change to this has been to add a new section in and to kind of differentiate a couple of different things. We've incorporated the procedure by which the GAC may give advice to the ICANN board and how we expect that could occur in the context of advice concerning particular applications that were received. So the module has incorporated that GAC advice procedure, but it's intended to clearly differentiate that procedure from the independent formal objection filing and dispute resolution procedure, which is open to any third parties who have standing to object to a certain application on certain defined grounds. So that's how the module has been updated. There have been a few revisions to the standards for making determinations on particular types of objection, one on the community objection having to do with how an objector could establish detriment, which is part of the standard. That's been the subject of quite a bit of comment and discussion about how that standard should be put together. And then also the limited public interest objection standard has been enhanced by some work and recommendations done by the REC 6 working group. Also in Module 3, we've incorporated, as Kurt mentioned, some limited fee exemptions for governments who wish to participate in the objection process and also for ALEC. Sorry about that. Module 5, and I'm skipping over Module 4 because there's really that's been stable for a while, so there's nothing really significant to highlight there. Module 5 is the concerns the last stages of the process, how an application that's been successful transitions to becoming an operational new TLD. And so Module 5 also includes the registry agreement. A couple of changes here. There's been some clarifications to the obligations that registries have to investigate reports and complaints and requests that they get from law enforcement or government agencies having to do with illegal conduct that may be occurring in the TLD. There has been some an additional provision concerning the registry's obligation to provide data for economic studies that may be done once the application round has completed and We're looking at the, weighing the effects of that has had. The registry agreement also includes the fees that are applicable. That there's been a change to that. There's a transaction-based variable component, which was previously based on a number of registrations threshold, which was changed to a volume-based threshold. There's also been some clarification on the process that's used for releasing country names at the second level in GTLDs. There were quite a few questions on that in the last round of comments that we got. And finally, there's a confirmation about ICANN's intention to respect court orders that came out of the discussions with the GAC about scenarios where a government may have given its approval to an application and then at some point has a dispute with the applicant, resulting in some sort of court proceeding. Finally, also attached to Module 5 and the registry agreement are a number of other documents having to do with trademark protection and how the registry operates going forward. And so a few of the changes here, there's an expectation for a trademark clearinghouse, which will enable rights holders to register marks in one central place and then have that data be accessible to all of the new TLD registries that want to use it for their pre-launch services. There's been a broadening of the types of rights that are accepted in the clearinghouse. There's been some clarification on costs. Basically, the costs are borne by the parties using the services. So the trademark holders would pay at the time that they enter the clearinghouse, and the registries would pay while they're using the data for Sunrise or trademark claims services. The URS is a rapid suspension system, which is intended to address clear-cut cases of abuse and provide a quick means to suspend those names where that can be established. So we've simplified and streamlined that somewhat, reduced some of the time frames for the various stages, and also simplified in terms of using form complaints and limited words and that sort of requirements. Proof of use has been clarified. Use can be shown with a declaration and a sample of how the trademark is being used. There has also been a limited loser pays provision for the URS if there's a complaint where a number of domain names are at issue. And finally, in the post-delegation dispute resolution procedure, this is a procedure that a trademark holder could bring against a registry operator if they fear that the registry operator is affirmatively engaging in some infringing activity. The clarification there is that the remedies that would be imposed by ICANN as a result of that type of proceeding would be in line with what was recommended by the panel who was hearing that complaint. I think that's the end of my section. I'd like to make one additional comment, which is that through this process over the years, I've really come to value the public comment process for the type of dialogue that it makes possible and the intelligence that people bring to solving some really difficult problems. I've found it actually started to actually look forward to getting comments and finding that process really exciting. It's been an honor for me to be involved in crafting this program with all of you, so thank you for that. And I'm going to turn it over to Michael Salazar, who will take you into operational readiness.
Thank you, Karen. So, Kurt, I'm a little confused about what we accomplished today. Was it the easy part or the hard part? And what part do I have left going forward? All of it. Yeah, thanks. So I want to cover a couple of areas regarding operational readiness. Now that we have an approved guidebook, these are effectively key components of the program. The first two components are really focused on the applicant, while the third is really just an update. So the first component being the TLD application system, or TAS. The second, the applicant service center, or the ASC. And then finally, the service providers update. And I have no idea why there is an acronym associated with that particular topic. We like acronyms, apparently. So what is TAS? TAS is the driving system for the application program. It's where we're going to manage the entire application processing program. It's where applicants will register and submit their applications, where evaluation panelists will access that data to conduct their analysis, provide the results, and it's where we will track progress of those applications through every step in the process. So it is built on something called a business process management platform, or a BPM platform. And the reason why we chose that platform was that it allowed us to configure or automate business processes such as the ones I've just described. Another key component of this is that if you can see up on here, there's a screenshot of one of the screens, the applicant landing page. It will provide updates as to where you are within the application process for a given application. And it allows us to send auto reminders to the applicant so that you as an applicant are aware of what tasks that you have to complete, or you are aware of what important dates are coming up. So over the next few months, we will be releasing some TAS resources. Just to let you know where TAS is today, we're actually wrapping up testing this week. We expect to have a full working version of the tool available next week, or within the next couple of weeks. Once we have that done, we are going to record some demos and do some webinars. We understand that it's, we've gotten a lot of questions about what TAS is going to look like and how is that going to work with filling out your application. So we're going to do some webinars to make sure that you have some comfort over what that registration process looks like and what the application submission process looks like. We will also provide some user guides, some detailed user guides and quick start user guides. So I don't know if you're like me, whenever I buy anything like a stereo or a computer or a TV, you get the really detailed guide and the quick start guide. I pretty much just go to the quick start guide. So we're going to make both available for you. The second area is the Applicant Service Center, or the ASC. The goals of the ASC are to ensure that we are able to provide support to applicants that is timely, that is consistent, and that is transparent. We will be working on a program that will also be multilingual. Sorry, I kind of lost my train of thought there. We'll be multilingual and multi-regional. In fact, what we've done so far is we've hired our customer service lead, Trang Nguyen. Trang, if you want to stand up and wave to the crowd. So Trang has been hired. She's been on board since April, and Trang is tasked with building the ASC. In fact, we actually have a request for proposal that's been posted on our website to hire or find a global customer service center provider to help us achieve our goals. We're also going to build a number of self-help tools. So the purpose of the self-help tools are that applicants can get answers to their questions fairly quickly. You shouldn't have to wait for an answer to come through the ASC. We hope that all of the information is available either through a frequently asked question or through a knowledge search database. And we're also exploring some online forms. So what's available now? The frequently asked questions. We have an email that's been available for quite some time, the new gtld@icann.org email, and we've received a lot of questions about the program to date. In fact, a lot of those questions, which we've answered, have helped form the basis for the FAQs and for the knowledge search database that we're building. I strongly encourage you that if you have questions about the program, that you start asking those questions as soon as possible. A lot of what that will do will help drive what other additional guidance we may need to provide to you to help you with the application process. The service provider update. So there are a number of evaluation panels that we have to staff with global service firms. So the process for identifying the evaluation service provider started in February of 2009, and we've gone through a process of identifying a set of qualified global service provider firms. We shortlisted the list of the responses, and we put them through an oral presentation exercise. We actually asked them some pretty tough questions about what their skill sets were, what their global presence was, what approach were they taking to evaluate the particular application or for the particular panel, so for geographic names or string similarity. And we now have our short list, or I should say our final candidates. We are in the process of negotiating contracts with them, and as soon as we have those contracts negotiated, we will announce who those firms are. And I just lost the rest of the presentation. Okay, so I guess I'm done. So the last slide. We are posting requests for proposals for a number of other service providers. I've talked about the Customer Service Center RFP. We are going to post the background screening RFP in the next few weeks, and then we're going to continue to look for other service providers to fill the needs that we need here. So if you know anybody, please let them know that we're going to have RFPs posted on our website to provide services. And that is all I have. Barbara, I believe, is coming up to talk about communications. Thank you.
Well, hello. I'm delighted to be here to discuss the communications plan that we will be implementing beginning today, as Kurt mentioned earlier. There we are. We have some pretty ambitious goals where this communications plan is concerned. Whenever your target is global awareness, to make everybody on the planet aware of an opportunity, that's a pretty high standard to set. So we are going to hit the ground running in doing this, essentially with those goals that you see, but with four key components to the communications effort that I'll get to on the next slide. We do want to aim at businesses rather than at end internet users at this stage, because obviously the average user is not going to apply. And we want to communicate clearly, colorfully, concisely, and creatively. One of the key things about launching such a big, ambitious plan is to ensure that you get your audience engaged. So, you know, we can't do this with, apologies to my beloved ICANN, you know, with the kinds of jargon that has meaning within this community. So our communications program is going to be in plain language, in the six UN languages, because this is a very international effort. But it's also, its goal is going to be to engage people, to get them involved in why new GTLDs are so incredibly good for the world. This is launching immediately, and as that slide says, this was the board's decision last night. But I know that some questions have come up today about why is it going to take so long to have the communications program fully in force. Well, one of the reasons is that we are looking at June and July, which is summer in many countries, and we want our audience fully engaged. But it's also the fact that in order to do a global campaign like this, we need to have the time to get, you know, things like contracts in place with agencies and all, and to do a proper job of it. So we are starting out actually today with a real bang, because as a news story, today we are already seeing that there is tremendous interest in new GTLDs. We've got, you know, we're on the homepage of the BBC. We've got major stories in all the international wire services. Many, many, many news stories out there today. And that's indicative of how compelling a story this is going to be from a press standpoint. Let me just go up to my only other slide, which is the four components of this program. As number one point is that we are going to be taking, if you will, a roadshow to the various regions. And while we will have communications running in every region for each one of the months of this period, we are going to have focus in individual regions through a roadshow concept. So we will address existing conferences, for instance. We will create events of our own as appropriate in some countries, but to really gin up the level of knowledge and understanding in individual regions requires that you devote quite a bit of dedicated effort to that region at some point. What's not on that list, but I think in the light of everything that has been occurring here in Singapore, it's important to note that we will be focusing a lot of attention on developing nations as well. The challenges from a communication standpoint can be bigger in those countries, not always, but sometimes, and we will be developing plans on how to maximize our impact in those countries. In terms of the focus on social media, I think I'm talking to the right crowd here in terms of saying that social media is an incredibly powerful way to reach people. So we are going to be very much sharpening our efforts to engage people via social media around the world. Mainstream press coverage I've just touched on, except for that mainstream word, because that's actually a very important word in this context. We tend to speak, you know, to our community, and we have a very broad understanding of a lot of the concepts behind the new GTLD program, but the people that we're trying to reach may not, you know, probably don't in most cases. So we want to move this out of the tech sphere and much more into the broad mainstream audience, so that people who haven't really followed ICANN, haven't followed new GTLDs, can get engaged and understand it. And that starts with the press coverage that you see today. This is not tech reporting, just tech reporting that we're seeing. It's the mainstream press, and that's a good sign. And lastly, global advertising. We do think this is an effort that requires some outreach from an advertising standpoint around the world. This is one of the reasons that we needed the longer period of time in order to get this plan up and running fully. It is up and running today, but will be gaining momentum over the next few months. And we hope to launch that global advertising campaign in September. And that will be a very key element in terms of how we raise global awareness. Advertising works. It's a good investment of our time and effort to get the word out. So I'm going to leave it at that for now and hand back to Kurt. And I understand, Kurt, we're going to have some questions afterwards, so we'd be happy to hear those as well and respond. Thanks.
Thank you, Barbara, Karen, and Mike. I hope to be as eloquent as Karen someday. I just want to review with you timelines. This one is looking backwards, so we don't really need to look at it, but I wanted to post it in the presentation for the record's sake. It was the plan leading up to the consideration in Singapore that was done a few months ago. And then this is a reasonable facsimile of the timeline that the board posted today, so I wanted to make sure it was clear with everybody what the intended plan is, and that is that the communications plan essentially kicks off today, given some of the spin-up time for the global and regional efforts that Barbara described, plus our goal of ensuring that everybody who wants to understands about the possibilities, opportunities, and risks about the process before it's launched. The communications strategy, the communications campaign or period will extend, you know, through the launch of the process, but applications will be received starting on January 12th, which is essentially the first real available day after the close of the holidays, and then the application window will close 3 months later. The rest of the time spans are really dictated by what's already in the guidebook, so we anticipate that the published results of the first initial evaluation round will be made in November, and then the rest of the timeframes are described in the guidebook, and you can refer to that for that. But the steps after that are execution of an agreement with ICANN, going through the pre-delegation testing, and then the IANA function delegation process. And then we also want to note our continuing commitment to meet the commitments we've made in the affirmation of commitments to conduct a review of the new GTLD program 12 months after the new GTLDs are operational. So I just wanted to close with that timeline and thank everybody. We're available to take questions up until the top of the hour when the session's scheduled to end. And I just want to leave up, or I'll put back later, that there's already been new GTLD sessions here, sort of a new GTLD 101 that was attended by 120, 130 people on Sunday, and then just finished was a session on IDN variants. We want to delegate variants to flesh out the new GTLD experience. But coming up on Wednesday, there's a trademark clearinghouse discussion where implementation details of the clearinghouse will be discussed among experts in registry operations, trademarks, and the like. Thursday, there's a getting ready session that's really attended, or the panel is community members, and then another session about joint applicant support working group for support of new applicants from developing countries, sort of a summit there. So please attend those sessions and look at the calendar, because there's a lot of other items going on too. It's a pretty darn cool meeting in a great place with, I think, the best ICANN food ever. So that already makes it a success. So I wish I had the right words to thank everybody for their participation in this. Many of us are going to go on and keep implementing this program and partake in it, and all of us together will be working here on the next big thing. And there's lots of work to be done to make this ICANN work. So thank you very much, and I'll take questions, or the team will take questions. Hi, Adrian.
Hi, my name is Adrian Kindris. First of all, Kurt, fantastic job. I feel like my Christmases have all come at once today. So just had a quick question with the timeline. Could you bring that timeline slide up for me, please?
No, that's too much transparency.
I just wonder, the November 2012 timeline you have there on initial evaluation results, Is that initial evaluation? Because I was always of the understanding that initial was just a quick check before you then went off to standard evaluation. It seems that that's a long window for the initial evaluation.
So the initial evaluation means you would be done. So then you would have passed technical and operational evaluation, and we think the majority of applications, you know, will not be objected to or be subject to contention. So that's done, and then you would enter into the contract execution process.
Right, so yeah, you're pretty much good to go then as far, right. And then you're, right, thank you, that's good clarity, right. Thank you.
So if that's it. Hey.
Hi, Kurt. My name is Annalisa Roger. I have a question. After the application window closes, is there a time period where ICANN publishes who has applied or what strings may have been applied for?
That's right. That's in the guidebook. It's expected to be about a two-week time frame between the closure of the window, and we'll publish all the applications at the same time, so that'll be the first time they're all public. And your name?
I'm Adrian Kindris. I'm under instructions from staff. So just on the, would you have to wait for a board meeting in order to get your delegation?
So the board, so I'm going to try to spin this up, but have to go back and get a better answer. But the board is intending, as I recall, not to approve every single delegation, but rather, provide oversight for the process. So I'll say that the board's not going to approve every delegation. It may approve the results. I think it's going to approve the results. Dan, do you want to help me? It's going to approve the results of the evaluation when they're done. He's looking it up.
I can.
We'll provide clarification.
Thank you, sir.
Oh, Karen knows.
So, as Kurt said, it's not the intention that the board would have to approve the delegation in every case. As it's spelled out in Module 5, there are certain conditions that might trigger a board review. If there was an objection, or if the applicant has negotiated material changes to the agreement, or there's been some material change, those are just some possible things that might cause that. But in general, if it's a standard application, has met all of the criteria, it has not been an exception in any sort of way, that would be able to be approved without explicit approval from the board for the individual applications.
Thanks, Karen. Hi, Jeff.
Hello, Jeff Newman. Thank you, Kurt, for everything you've done and for getting this to where we are now. A quick question on, actually, Michael had a list of all the service providers that were we need to get. I didn't see on there the emergency back-end registry operators. I think that's, so the question I had is, what's your timeline for selecting those or having an RFP for those so that we can get some more information on the continued operations instrument?
How come that wasn't on the list, Mike? So I'll report to you that Carla and I actually had a meeting in the front row there while others were speaking about a release of either an RFP or an RFI with certain constraints around it to make sure we get the right amount of information. So we're looking forward to releasing that in the next week or two. We're trying to figure out how to – I'm going on vacation. And we're trying to figure out how to get that released while I'm gone. So I'm sorry about that omission. Okay, well, thank you very much for coming, everybody, and all your time.
Bonjour, je suis Monsieur Dupont.